Hey, you heard of Urban Float? Well, if you like to relax and disconnect, then you should check out Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, located next to Rosenfeld's Jewish Deli in the new Ocean Atlantic Shopping Center on Route 1 North. Guests of Urban Float get to relax and float in their own flotation pod filled with purified skin temperature water and 1,200 pounds of dissolved Epsom salts. The health benefits are profound. I love it. You can book your first float at urbanfloat.com. Just be sure to select the Rehoboth Beach location and use code FIRSTTIME at checkout to receive 50% off your first float. Renew, refresh, and revive at Urban Float.
This is the Film Effect with Tiff.
When you polish the floor, you have to move the tree. If you can't do something right, don't do it at all.
Hello. We're recording.
Hey, Tiffany.
Hey. Okay, so hey, guys. This is Tiffany. You're listening to The Film Effect. Today, I have Donna De Kuyper. And Donna, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi there. I'm Donna De Kuyper. I've lived in Lewis for quite a long time now. I have two adult daughters, married to Scott De Kuyper. We own Hotel Blue, and we see a lot of movies here. And especially the cinema arts has been a great addition to the community.
Yeah, I love that theater. That's really cool. Do you guys like have a, I think you can join, right?
Are members, but for some reason we almost have never been to the film festival.
Oh, really?
That goes on. And it's just like we're out of town or we're just doing other stuff. And it's hard to, I mean, I know people that go to 6 films a day for
Get
5
out of
days.
Here.
Oh, no.
That's, can I be them?
That's what they do. Yeah.
I want to do that. That's like my plan for retirement. I'm just going to like read books, which I don't do very well. And and just go to like matinees all the time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
We're seeing Downton Abbey tomorrow.
I know. That's very like excited. A very exciting. I didn't watch the show.
I don't think you need to.
Really?
Scott hasn't watched. Okay. Doesn't know the show either. And people seem to think it's a standalone film. I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'm probably going to see it. I have a couple friends that want to see it, and I wasn't sure if you had to know the story or know the show, but it's definitely one of those shows that people are, like, obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
If they're, like, Downton Abbey people, they're Downton Abbey people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, this kind of happened last minute because, you know, I'm realizing doing this show that I need to find somebody every week to talk to. Obviously, I can talk and listen to myself fine, but I found Donna. She was like on Facebook. She happily commented on my request. And so here we are. And you had mentioned a few movies that kind of like are your favorite go-to movies or movies that you feel affected by. And one was Gone with the Wind, which I've
seen
it. You
didn't have 6 hours to watch it yesterday?
No, I didn't. But I was actually really curious about it. I'm like, one of these days I got to rewatch that. And then you mentioned, we ended up deciding that we were going to watch Tully, which you've seen, and then and then I kind of thought of Mommy Dearest because you were talking about themes of motherhood, and being young and how you experience movies and stories about being a mom and then seeing a movie about that when you're actually a mom and you have had children. And how different that might be. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah. When I was thinking about our talk today, it occurred to me that there are an awful lot of stories that either are about surviving your children or surviving your mother.
Wow.
And, I mean, so obviously those are universal themes that people think a lot about, they write a lot about. And I've experienced a lot of films through my life, and they take on all different meanings depending on where I am, in my age and in my experiences. I hadn't watched Mommy Dearest since 1981 when it came out, and at that time I didn't have kids. So, for me, it's kind of a one-dimensional film, like, you know, she's just awful, and that's that.
So I know that you had mentioned that, like, when we were messaging each other, and I was thinking, like, wow, I guess it's, I was wondering what you meant by that, actually, because I see your, explain.
Okay.
I'm curious.
First of all, I think probably Joan Crawford was this larger-than-life Hollywood movie star. I think in that era, and that's like the 30s, the 40s, in that era, people belonged to movie studios and their image was everything, and they had teams of people signing your autograph on things. And I mean, it was a personal industry, not just a movie industry.
Yeah.
And your image probably belonged to you even less than it does now. And she essentially adopted a couple of kids. I mean, maybe she wanted children a little bit. Her boyfriend at the time said, "You're too vain to have children."
Right. That was a great line.
Yeah.
As I was rewatching it.
I guess he meant about her body.
Yeah. I mean, I was, like I said, I was rewatching the movie. And we're jumping right in. I feel like I should at least, like, credit. Let's, like, if we're going to talk about, do you want to talk about this movie first or do you want to talk about the other one?
Well, let's talk about this one, because I think the other one is really intense.
Yeah. And listen, you know what's cool about these two movies is I see some, like, interesting themes that play out completely differently because they're totally different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideas around what motherhood does to some people in terms of, like, how they perceive their children and what their children then say to them about themselves, like who they identify themselves as now that they have a child. It's like, I'm this, okay? Or maybe mm-hmm. they go run away from that. Like, and those two women are so different, and they're totally different stories. But I did find, like, some interesting, for me, I feel like there's some common themes around that. Okay, so the movie Tully, we'll talk about Mommy Dearest.
I think, like as you change and perceive yourself as a mother as opposed to who you were before, I think these were two extremes. Joan Crawford changed very little becoming a mother. She adjusted her life very little. In fact, she kind of fit her adopted children into her life as it worked for her. Mm-hmm. And maybe even a little bit, it was suggested as a publicity thing, that she would be more beloved if she adopted these unwanted children. She said to her children, although she treated them badly, but she said to them, "Adopted children are the luckiest children in the world because you are chosen."
Yeah, that's right.
And wouldn't that be lovely?
Like,
if that were always true.
The unwanted children. Lucky you. Like, I'm like, really? These kids are unwanted?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that says a lot about her, obviously.
So she changed very little having kids. Tully is about a woman who completely loses her sense of who in the world she is, like literally who in the world she is when she has a child. And it's a modern movie, so it's much more it's much more blatant in talking about how her body changed and how sex changes and how, you know, everything in your life changes. It's not a glamorous movie.
No, it's very real. I found that to be a really real kind of portrayal of what it's like to have kids, give birth to them, and deal with all of those things, the day in and day out, experience of having children and raising them. So I'm going to just real quick give, like, the details of these movies for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about. So Mommy Dearest is a movie that was made 1981. It is directed by Frank Perry. It stars Faye Dunaway, Steve Forrest, Diana Scarwid. There's a bunch. I'm sure no one knows any of these people. All the young people have no idea who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Faye Dunaway was a pretty famous, popular actress at the time. And I think she got a lot of credit for her portrayal of Joan Crawford, who this movie is about, which is, it's also based on, from what I understand, the book Mommy Dearest that her actual adopted daughter wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And then they turned it into this movie. And I think that, yeah, it is interesting watching a modern day movie and a movie like this that was trying to be, I think at the time it was trying to shock you about this is the reality of a movie star that did all these crazy things, you know. But the movies now are even more real in the way that they show life and people and the way that they, so it does feel a little campy in parts when you watch Mommy Dearest to me. People love that, though. I mean, it's funny how this movie has become quite a bit of a horror story. I actually, when I was in college, because of this movie, I ended up dressing up like that character for Halloween, the wire hanger scene. And I had like the whole situation with my face
with your eyebrows.
Yeah, well, no, the mask and the night, and she's got the rollers and the wire hanger. And I remember walking around all night, and people were like, "What are you?" And I'm like, "Mommy Dearest." And then they'd be like, "Oh, no wire hangers." So that's the credit for that movie that we're talking about today. And then let me real quick pull up Tully if nobody knows what we're talking about with that movie. So Tully was made, you know, came out just this past year, 2018. It stars Charlize Theron. It was directed by Jason Reitman. Oh my God, Jason Reitman. Isn't he Ghostbusters? Who's Jason Reitman?
He did that film Boy. He's kind of known for making very real films. I'm not sure if he was Ghostbusters, but a lot of times, you know, directors, like they start out with something hugely commercial, and when they get that success, they get to make the more personal films they want to make. So maybe.
No, I'm totally wrong. I'm so sorry. Don't listen to me. I'm always thinking the wrong thing. I'm like, no, you're right. That guy looks 12 years old. definitely not him. No, so this guy, it looks like he's done, oh my God, a lot of things, actually. Young Adult, Up in the Air. He actually has directed The Office. He did Juno, which was another one of my favorite movies of all time.
I love that movie.
And oddly enough, you'll find this funny, when I met Nicole, she said, "You're exactly like Juno. You remind me of her at the time." And I'm like, okay, I'm a 16-year-old girl. Like,
no, I could see that, though.
Yeah, but it was kind of a compliment. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll take that. Ellen Page and Juno, that's like a great thing to be compared to, in my opinion. So that was kind of that movie has a very warm place in my heart. Let's talk about Mommy Dearest. So what did you think about the motherhood themes in that movie, or just,
well,
how did it actually affect you, or didn't affect
you at all?
Well,
I'll tell you what, I watched it before I went to bed last night, and that wasn't a good idea.
No. Did you get it? Were you upset?
I was disturbed. I mean, I wasn't like consciously disturbed when I went to sleep, but I had kind of a disturbed night. Just like, I don't know, I felt kind of weird and anxious, woke up a bunch. So it was clearly upsetting. When you see something like that, I mean, I'm certainly not a perfect parent, but I wasn't Joan Crawford. And so when you see someone mistreating children so badly, it's upsetting. And I started thinking, you know, we're much more aware of mental health issues now and drug and alcohol abuse and how it affects people's behavior. And so I started like trying to think of reasons why she acted that way. But then I would talk to Scott about it, and he remembered the movie, but, you know, hadn't thought terribly much about it. And we came to the conclusion that, no, she probably was just, maybe she was a narcissist, but, you know, most actors have a part of that in themselves. And no, maybe she was just a kind of a horrible person. Do you remember at the very end, like, you know, her kids sort of survive her, although the son is very peripheral.
Yeah, they
story.
Don't seem to put a lot of focus on that.
And
towards
then she, as her final moment, the lawyer is reading her will, and she writes them completely out of it.
Yeah, it's like, you're right. She does not shift.
No,
it's like, you know, when you watch a story, and this is just storytelling in any form, like whether it's a play or a book. Usually, your protagonist. The point is that they have something they have to work through. They're presented with some kind of conflict that's going to push them through to change by the end of the story. And that's why we watch stories, because we love to see people change.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in this story, I guess Christina is the one that makes a turn in some way.
Both those actresses were amazing.
Yeah,
that little girl and Diana Scarwood.
Oh my God. I mean, you're right. It's a disturbing movie. I remember I just was really affected by the scene where she cut all of her hair off in the mirror. I mean,
Mommy,
crazy.
Mommy, I can't go to school now.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
She doesn't change. Maybe that's why the film seems one-dimensional to me.
Yeah,
maybe
probably.
Maybe it's because there was no arc in her character.
And I think that was the point, was for us to see that, like, she stayed the same, in a sense, and didn't have too many redeeming qualities for us
to
like her.
She was a tough woman for the time, in a difficult industry, did what she needed to do to survive, was not a victim. I mean, the choices that she made were her choices. I never felt like she was a victim. So it's like there were certainly some admirable qualities to who she was, but she wasn't a kind person. She wasn't a thoughtful person.
And I actually wanted to ask you this because I know you were you're in the world of acting, and you're awesomely talented and amazing.
Thank you.
I just love watching you. And I was thinking back, I know a lot about some of the, you know, back in the day, studios and women trying to be actors back then. It was a tough time. It was a tough time for them. And I think they do try to showcase that in the movie a little bit, like how she keeps getting thrown from one spot to the next. And she's so desperate all the time to be recognized, and or else she won't have a job. It's almost like if you're not a great actress and your movie doesn't do well, then you're done. And that's your whole life.
And she was getting older.
And so there were all these themes around women of that time period in the business of filmmaking and being an actor. And I think it's, you know, I think it's funny. I think it's probably obviously different today, but I still think maybe women still feel that pressure. And I don't know because I'm not in that world. But I think that played a really important part in the story for her. And then I was like wondering, is this like this kind of twisted person that she became have something to do with that? And that's like, you know, her obviously her backstory, which we don't get to hear much of other than her father left. They keep throwing that out there. You don't get to know much about Joan's actual childhood or her life that brought her to this moment of crazy, because she's really crazy.
Oh yeah, that like she has wild breakdowns that come from nowhere.
And it's disturbing. It's like, you know, meant to scare you and freak you out. I'll never forget those scenes. And I don't know, you know, I was sitting there thinking like, why did my mother let me watch this movie like so many times? But it does, you know, when you talk about how movies make you think about your own life or you resonate with it in a certain way, I'm not trying to throw my mom under the bus, but I think there was, you know, my mom loves that movie too. And there's that opening scene where she's, well, first you don't see her for the first 5 seconds.
Right.
I love the opening
scene
where like the routine of like the, you know, the washing her face and her arms and the ice bowl and like.
Which was pretty weird and obsessive, wasn't it? Like the way she scrubbed. Ugh.
Well, they do. I think they do a great job of like telling you who this person's about to be that you're watching. Like, this is who she is. And then you see her after she goes to the studio and she's scrubbing the floor on her hands and knees. Okay. And my mother does that. My mother cleans like that. Now, I wouldn't say she's nuts. Like, she wouldn't walk around and be like, move the plant, you know, which is, you know, that's in the little opening, by the way. It's funny that we talked about this movie because I like that little opening. But that's like how meticulous she is about it. And my mom was like that a little bit, you know. And this idea of perfectionism or representing that to other people, you know, making it so important to have this house be perfectly clean and people see you a certain way. Yeah.
Do you remember when she was inspecting what the housekeeper had done?
Yeah.
And her staff was clearly terrified of her, and for good reason. And she moves the plant, and there's a ring of dirt under the plant, and the housekeeper is, you know, just kind of shaking, and she goes, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the dirt.
Yes. Oh, my God, I love the lines. I think I'm just twisted because I love the lines, and I love the... Now, would you call that overacting, or was that...
You know...
I want to know your take on her performance.
Well...
You can be honest.
I think what you said... Style has changed a lot. You know, people are very natural actors. I mean, I like that. I like a natural style of acting, even on stage, where you have to be bigger than life, but you still have to be like a person talking.
That seems so hard.
I think it is tricky. And so I thought Faye Dunaway, you know, the saying, chewing the scenery, that means just like, you know, just out of control. Too much, just too much. Like Lady Macbeth. I mean, she was sort of Lady Macbeth.
Right.
In this. And so I thought it was a bit over the top. I'd really love to see someone remake that film.
You know what? That's a pretty cool idea, actually. I wonder what it would look like now.
By Jason Reitman.
Hey,
that
let's
would
get
be
him.
Cool.
Let's get him around. Let's talk to him. Hey, Jason.
Tell him we've been comparing films.
We
want to
see. Yeah,
it.
We want to see a remake of this movie. Yeah, I. It's, you know, part of me. I have these like little quotes, just to give you people an idea. If I can pull it up, let me see if I can actually pull it up because I always have trouble with the technology here. I'm still learning. Guys, I'm still learning. Okay, so let's just you know, we're talking about the overacting. Sorry, Faye. I don't want to do that to you. You're amazing. Maybe that's what Joan Crawford was really like. We don't know. But just to give you guys a taste of what we're talking about, if you haven't seen this movie, my God, this one is a little bit scary. Okay, let's just play it because it's another scene that I was like, oh my God. You can hear, hopefully this is up loud enough. All right, we're just going to play this little guy and see what happens here. Hold on. Oh no, it doesn't want to work. No, it's not working.
Technology is wonderful until it doesn't.
I know. I have some other fun things too, but go ahead. Continue while I...
So I do think maybe Joan Crawford was an over-the-top personality. I think she entered a room like...
Tina!
There we go.
Bring me the axe! Tina!
Just for fun.
Bring me the axe!
Do you remember that scene?
When she's digging up the rose bushes?
Yeah, and yeah. Not only that, but she... The nanny or the what was her name? She was such an important part too. It was like her only friend at the end.
She was such she was enabling her.
Yes,
but she was also probably keeping the kids as safe as she could.
Yeah, but she
there.
Wakes them up in the night.
Little children.
Yes,
what are they like six?
She's
and
like,
eight?
Get up! We need to go to the garden. Your mother wants you in the garden. And then you hear that, which is Tina, bring me the axe, which she's asking a child to bring her the axe in the garden in the middle of the night, which is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
And then here's another one just for fun. Let's see if I can remember which scene this one's from.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to? Why can't you treat me the way I would be treated by any stranger on the street? Because I am not one of your fans.
Okay.
I think I've had that conversation with one of my daughters.
I don't know why. I love it so much. I love it so much. Maybe because it is a little, like, less real, you know? Like, who does that? Who acts like that?
She says things out loud, or at least the script has her saying things out loud.
Oh, did you look at the script?
No. I'm just like...
You're
just
guessing?
Just
yeah.
guessing.
Yeah.
The script has her saying things that most mothers might think, but never say out loud. I mean, we all have crazy thoughts, and we get mad and stuff, but she said all this stuff and did all this stuff that, I mean... So abusive.
Crazy.
And no one, I bet no one would ever help those kids. I mean, who's gonna, you know,
well, on the outside, all it looked like was they were having this amazing life. You know, there was no video TV, like not in the way, you know, it was all film and they were having like press scenarios that were all very set up and very fake. So to the outside world, you know, no one's seeing that. They don't see that.
Remember the birthday party?
Yes.
And she gets a bunch of gifts.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the night, her mother says, "You only get to keep one, and we'll give them away to children who need them." Which is a good lesson, but the way she did it
mm-hmm.
was cruel and horrible for like a child, you know.
Yeah, and this is like me maybe reading too much into this movie, but as I was just looking at it, because I feel like now I have to finish it because I didn't get through the whole thing, but I did see it a million times. But I was noticing more in these like subtle moments like that one that you're talking about. And what's kind of cool, and I don't know if it was meant to be or you know, on purpose. She gets this child because she wants a child, in a sense to, like, maybe she wants to complete her life in a way.
And she was expensive. Do you remember the lawyer saying?
Oh, right,
when
right.
they brought the baby in the door, I hope you love her because she was expensive.
Right, yes. Like, everything's expensive that you want.
And he literally probably bought the child from some
well, she got,
young woman.
She got denied by the agency.
Because she was a single woman. Oh, yeah, there were some interesting feminist points.
Yeah, so she got denied. She obviously wanted the love of this man probably more than he was willing to go along with. He didn't like see her in that way. Like, you're not a mother. This mm-hmm. isn't for you. So she gets this kid thinking, like, this kid is going to be what I want. And very quickly, as we all realize with children, that's not, I mean, I didn't have children in that thinking, but like some people I think have an idea of like what a child's going to be for them. And it's not, right? And so, and what they do in the movie, which I thought was really interesting, it's almost like this kid becomes her mirror. Because what the kid does is she copies her, mm-hmm. she mimics her, she plays in front of the mirror and pretends to be her. And it's like for the first time she's getting a dose of what she actually is. And every time she sees this kid represent herself back to her, that's when she flips out on her mm-hmm. every time. And so it's like she has to stomp it out. You know, that's the, to me, the mental illness of like, I don't want to be seen that way. But this kid is showing her every time because the kid is pretty real. The kid's just like, I'm just doing what you do. You know, I'm just copying the way that I see you.
And she really didn't mean to be
no.
mocking her mother. And yet Joan Crawford saw what a horrible character she was portraying. That can't possibly be me.
That's
Shut
right.
up, kid.
So she stomps it out, and mm-hmm. she does it in horrific ways. And that's, to me, that scene with the cutting the hair off. Because she can't, I mean, that, she just takes it so over the top. And I think that continues throughout the movie until, you know, she grows up and she starts to have a voice. And then she's, you know, this is not for me. This is not working for me anymore. So, yeah, I don't know. What other thoughts do you have about that movie?
I actually would, and I don't imagine it would be remade because I don't think there's the interest in it. But I would be very curious to see it remade in a more natural style.
Did you see? Because I'm obsessed with those movies, like the actual Joan Crawford herself. I used to watch a lot of those movies. My mom was a big Bette Davis fan. Mm-hmm. Mildred Pierce. Mm-hmm. Tons. I'm trying to think of the other movies, but I just like if they're on, I know what they are. That was such a big one. And they did do a TV series. Susan Sarandon played Betty Davis.
Right.
Did you see it?
Yeah, the Dueling Divas.
Yes. And I was really, you know, listen, I don't think it was amazing, but I loved watching it because it's always like kind of fun to see people play those very well-known actresses. I don't know. It's just so cool to see. Like, I just love that.
Reinterpreted, yeah.
Yeah, and they actually remade with Mildred Pierce on HBO years ago with Kate Winslet.
That's right. Was it a miniseries?
It was a miniseries, yeah. And it was very different to me the way they did it. I still like the classic better than the remake of it. But those are great stories. And Mildred Pierce is also about mothers and daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So the themes of this just like go across the board, right? I don't know. Yeah, I've always been into like old movies. Did you like movies growing up?
I did. I loved movies. When I was growing up, there was a 3:30 afternoon movie, and I would come home from. I grew up in Michigan,
okay.
So in the winter, it would be getting dark. You know, when you get home from school, and I would go down into our basement, and I would lay on this big feather bed thing that my mom grew up with, turn on the TV, and watch the 3:30 movie, and it was almost always a black and white old film,
right.
And I don't. If I thought about it, I would come up with some specific films that I saw. But I do remember the feeling of it. I do remember, you know, like laying on that feather bed, watching, and just like totally getting lost. I've always been a big reader too,
mm-hmm.
And I would read like at night. But coming home, and this was junior high, so it was before your, you know, parties and all that stuff. So it was sort of alone time that was really developmentally important to me, I think, because
yeah.
I would watch, and I didn't know I wanted to be an actress at that time, but I it certainly had interest in it. And it was, you know, it really gave you a lot to think about and fantasize about. I love everything Natalie Wood ever did.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up when all the movie stars were busty blondes, almost. And then there was Natalie Wood, so I had someone I could kind of relate to, this petite brunette. And I love, we could have another discussion about her films, because she was remarkable. And I watched a lot of her movies after school.
Yeah. She looks like more of a real person, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there, maybe that was the time. I don't know. I mean, there definitely was a transition from women in movies having to look a certain way, and then they became like, oh yeah, that looks like what regular people look like walking around on the street. It's right. Not so glamorous. That's why there's another funny thing to me about that movie, like her hairstyles, like she's walking around the house like that. Like the full done up hair. Like what is going on? It was kind of funny to me. You know, and I don't know if that's just to add to the effect of like the, you know, what they want her to be seen as in the story.
Truly helmet.
Yeah. Like that was crazy.
Do
like,
you think those were wigs? I mean, I know.
I don't know.
Blonde actresses wore wigs a lot because they bleached their hair to the point of losing it.
Really?
And then they ended up having to wear wigs.
Right. Wow.
From a fairly young age. But she was never a bottle blonde. So I wondered, but yeah, she was always known for those, like those crazy bangs or the wings that kind of stuck out the side of her heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was actually most attractive as she got older.
Yeah.
Because she softened.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That movie, it's just, it
I
lives in my brain.
I certainly hadn't thought about it for a long time until you brought it up.
I planted it. I just was like, come on, Mommy Dearest, somebody talk to me about it. It's such a crazy movie. So I'm trying to think. And I love that you were just sharing your movie experience. I like was talking to Tom about it, and I was talking to my friend Tyrese about it, and I just to me the movie experience is a big thing too. It's like, why do we go to the movies? What do we get out of it? I love going to the theater. I was talking to Tyrese now. He's younger, and he was just saying like, I don't go to the movies much, you know, because you don't have to.
Yeah, I've got friends that don't ever go to the movies,
right?
And I don't. And I love them. They're wonderful people that I have other things in common with. But I can't imagine not choosing to go to movies.
Yeah, so you like going to the movies.
Love.
Yeah. Like, do you have, like, because for me, I was saying, like, we all have a thing, and I always want to ask people that come on, like, when you go to the movies, like, what is your, like, do you have a food of choice? Do you have, like, a place you like to sit?
I get the kid meal.
The kid meal.
The kid meal is.
Tell me.
It's cut. There's, like, this little rectangular box. There's a space for a small amount of popcorn. A little drink.
It's so good.
And they give you some awful candy that I always tell the people at the counter to keep and give to some kid who looks desperate for candy.
Right.
Hold on to that for them. So I get the kid meal, usually like lemonade because I don't drink soda much. And I sit whenever I can in that first tier of seats that has a railing in front of it because I like to put my feet up.
God, that's what Nicole likes. Just right there, yeah, because you can put your feet right there.
And I'm short, and so no one can be in front of me there that gets in my way.
And stadium seating is great. I remember when you would go to a movie and you didn't have that, you know, and then you've got the guy in front of you with the giant head.
Always.
Yeah, and if
it
you're little.
It doesn't matter where I go.
It's
the tallest man in the world.
You need a little seat every time you go. You just
a
like put this,
seat.
Bring it with you. You're like, all right, let's bring the seat. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I don't know, this is why I wanted to do a podcast about this. It's my favorite thing, going to the movies. I like to go with people. I like to go by myself. Mm-hmm. I like sitting there in the dark and just taking it all in. And, you know, in some ways it was a little bit like church for me. I grew up Catholic and going to church, but there's something about it that feels very, like, it's like my quiet, safe place. Mm-hmm. Like, I just like to go there, and it just feels very serene for me. To the point where I've seen It Part 2 now twice.
Oh, really?
Because my daughter wanted to see it with her friends, and I already went by myself, and I still sat there, and I was really funny because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go and have a nice, peaceful experience watching It Part 2. Everyone's like, how can you do that? I'm like, it's very peaceful for me. I don't know how to explain it to you. It's just, I don't care. It's scary stuff, but oh, it's so nice.
Great,
you know?
Cast.
It's like a spa day.
I haven't seen that movie, but it's a great cast.
Oh, it's a really, I will tell you, it's worth. It's a two-parter, you know, because they did the first part, and then they did the second part. It's long.
Mm-hmm.
if you were to put them together, it'd be like 6 hours. But yeah, really, really cool version of that story, which maybe we'll do that on another podcast. So I had a funny idea. I don't know if you're game for this. I didn't. It's not because you're an actress, so don't get upset with me. So I thought it'd be fun to add this to my podcast, which is to do a bit of a cold read.
Mm-hmm. I like cold reads.
I just picked a scene from Mommy Dearest. I didn't really even have time to look at it. And what I thought we could do is I'm going to hand you the pages, and I am not an actor.
Who do you want to be?
I was just going to let you be Joan.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because I think I'm not good at it. But here, you come on over. No. Oh, yeah. Here, take it.
Do you have a copy, too?
This is, yeah. So do you mind?
No.
Are you game, Donna?
I'm game.
Let's do it. And I'm going to bring this for people listening. We're going to do
this microphone away is what I'm thinking.
We're going to, yes. We're going to do this with all my guests. So whenever we discuss a movie, we're going to pull a scene and we're going to just decide to just badly. Well, she might, you're going to probably bring it. But I think some regular people may not be able to perform this as well. But it's not really the point, is it? Let's just do it for fun.
Okay,
so this is, for those of you that know the movie, this is a scene pretty early in the film. It's when Christina is at the pool and she's swimming, doing some like, not lessons, but I guess she's working on her swimming styles. What do you call that?
She's working on her dive.
Working on her dive. And Joan and her boyfriend, Greg, are also around the pool. And so this is the conversation that happens around the pool. So you tell me when you're ready.
Why don't you read the stage directions right before I start?
Yes. I'm going to set the scene, everyone. Yes. Here we go. Okay. Okay. So we are at the pool. Christina is perched on the edge of the pool, her arms out behind her, bent over in preparation to dive. She looks tired and waterlogged. She's waiting for her mother's orders.
You keep arching your back. You mustn't do that. Okay. 1, 2, 3, dive!
Ugh, but I'm tired, Mommy.
Quitter.
Christina returns to take her diving position at the edge.
Good. Now, 1, 2, 3, dive!
And Tina does.
They call, you run.
Oh, wait. Did we mess up the
pages?
Am
I out of order?
Oh, no! Am I?
That's all right. That might have been the end of that scene.
Was it?
I don't know.
Okay, we're going to keep going.
Okay.
He was about to get up to lean over and kiss her, but now he just sits down again easily, leans quietly over the table and looks. No, this is wrong. Oh, man, look, everyone, I've messed it up because I did this last minute. Should we just keep reading it?
Yeah, well, let's maybe we need to skip down to the bottom of that page, too. Wait, it says continued.
Oh, maybe that's what I did. Wow.
Maybe we need to start with you're
this,
here,
I
you're not
I apologize
here.
To my listeners. This is really, you were killing it too. You were like really bringing it in
thank
such an
you.
Awesome way. And I got really excited. Oh, man. Okay.
We can do, I think it'll be chronological if we go from the bottom of page 2 to the end.
Is that
so
what we're
I'm
doing?
Joan and you're Greg.
All right, let's just pick it up. We're just going to pick it up.
Okay. This is the best script the studio has, and it hasn't been offered to me. You could help me.
Joan, that's Mayer's business. I never tell a man I respect how to run his business.
Don't attack someone who cares for you. Oh, that's you.
Oh.
I think.
It's you.
Oh, it's me, passionately. Don't attack someone who cares for you. I just want that picture.
Relax, Joan. LB told me he wishes his male stars had your balls.
Is that any way to talk in front of a lady?
He also said that if they did have your balls, MGM would be a lot richer.
I just want that script. I want you, too.
You have me. He walks off, and she watches as Christina runs to him, dripping wet. He laughs, kissing her cautiously, and the child waves as Greg leaves. Have a good time, Tina.
Thanks, Uncle Greg. I love you. Now, who wants to go swimming?
I do.
I'll race you.
Nice. You're awesome.
That was a little Wicked Witchy.
Yeah, you know, I like it, though, and I feel terrible that I just totally messed up. But you know what?
This That's was a fun hard idea, though. That's a
no.
Fun
we're
idea.
Gonna
like
I'm
that.
Gonna perfect this. So come back for more. We'll do it again. And also, this was actually an interestingly tough script to find because it's not. It's so old.
Right.
That like I had it. It was very difficult for me to find a printable version of this. So I'm just, you know. But thank you. That was kind of fun. You do a great Joan.
Thank you.
You do a very good job. So what we'll do now is let's move on to talk about Tully real quick. I will tell you, I can't say that I liked this movie. To be honest with you, it was, I love Charlize. I love her. I think she's incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. She just does so many different things. But, And to me, it was more about the ending of this film that I had.
Which I did not see coming at all,
No, but I had heard from other people that there was, like, this weird twist. And so I wonder if that almost ruins the movie a little bit for you, because, at least for me watching it, because I was, like, looking for it. Yeah, I'm like, what is this twist going to be? And then I was questioning everything I was seeing, you know? So then I'm like, here comes the nanny or whatever they called her. And I'm like, all right, I don't know. Something's up with this person, obviously. But I did not see what that twist was. Do you want to explain a little bit about what this, if you could like describe what this movie is about?
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable film.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen a few of those actually lately, really, and wonderful films at Cinema Arts. They're often foreign films, and they tend to not care if we feel good so much when we leave. And
right.
This was a movie kind of like that. It wasn't made for us to walk away going,
No, and I actually love that. I actually love when a movie is like, I'm not going to try to please you. Yeah. Sorry.
And I saw it when it came out at the theater, so I hadn't read much buzz about anything, and I wasn't looking for a twist at the end. Spoiler alert.
But I said this last time. If you're listening to this show, that's all we do is spoil movies for you. So it's the movie spoiling podcast. If you weren't here last time,
that would be funny.
The movie spoiling podcast, kind of. You know, it's funny. I'm looking up as I'm talking, listening to you, the description. And usually there's pretty long descriptions of even like if it's a couple sentences or a paragraph. This has got one sentence because obviously they didn't want to tell you too much. So if you look up on IMDb what this movie is about, a struggling mother of three forms an unexpected bond with the night nanny hired to help with her newborn baby. Sorry, that's all you get. Which is great, because obviously they couldn't give you much more than that. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit why you picked this one.
I think it was unlike any movie about motherhood I had ever seen.
Yeah.
There's lots of, like, you know, comical mishap movies about motherhood and, you know, how you go crazy and how everything is really funny eventually and stuff like that. And this was very real. I think it's probably a great movie. My older daughter's sister-in-law-to-be just had her first baby.
Oh.
And I think there's... Women are under the impression or are given the impression that it's all very natural, that becoming a mother and doing mother things will just come to you. And I suppose that's true.
Do you think that's because it's like we're in a cult where we don't tell mothers? I feel like there's this unspoken thing that we have because it's such a, it's almost like, don't scare them, you know, like let them just experience
it
on there.
Or else there won't be any more people
on the planet.
That's
what I'm trying to say. But and I'm not trying to say that it's so scary, but I think that it's like, you know, it's one of those things in life people don't talk about it in a real way.
It's tricky. Yeah, like on one hand, you don't want to scare people into looking for problems.
True.
But on the other hand, if you're not expecting some challenges, you might think there's something wrong with you.
Yes. And I think there's a lot of pressure around motherhood, especially like that process of getting pregnant and having a baby and all the things that go along with a new baby and not knowing exactly what that's going to look and feel like. Like we all know what it kind of looks like, but until you experience it, you don't know.
No,
you know, no one
really
can tell
know.
You, you know, and I have a funny story. I just I photographed a birth recently and I've birthed two children. So I know what that's like. And I haven't done it for a long time. Obviously, it's been a while, you know? And I'm, like, glad that that part is over. I mean, it was fine. It was what it was. We'd give birth. We'd do it as women. And I don't know, when it's over, it's over. You don't like spend too much time thinking about it. But I'm in the room with these people. I was with them for like all day. I mean, and I was right there. I mean, I was basically like the only other person allowed in the room. It was the parents were just, we were tag teaming in and out because they weren't allowed to have so many people in there. And I'm sitting there watching this woman go through this experience that I can relate to. And it's almost as if I have never done it. That was how shocking it was to me. And I'm sitting there going, I cannot believe you did that. Oh my God. Like, wow. That's crazy.
It would be really different watching it than doing it.
Yeah, it was way more shocking than when I really was. Like, I remember walking out of the room and a couple times and I'm like, I don't think I can breathe. Like, I haven't taken a breath in that room for like an hour because it was weird to be on the outside of it. I've never experienced that. I can only remember being in it, and just when you're in it, it's just happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is interesting to see how it plays out when they show it in movies. But you're right. I will give this movie one thing that I think it does a pretty real job of putting you in that place without telling you. It's like they're just visually showing you piece by piece.
Yeah, there's not a lot of dialogue, I don't think. Because
no.
Because it's mostly Charlize Theron, and then eventually this nanny shows up to help her. But they mostly do. They don't talk that much.
That's right. And she doesn't answer any real questions either. That was another thing I was going to bring up.
Do you know the expression parallel play with little kids? Like,
yes.
Developmentally, like toddlers, up through being toddlers, they don't play together so much as they play side by side.
Right.
And Tully and Charlize Theron's character, who I don't even remember her name.
I don't think they say her name.
They may not.
Which I mean,
is interesting,
yes.
Too, in retrospect.
Yeah.
But they kind of parallel existed, which makes sense. But at the time, I didn't know why it made sense.
Right. And I'm just going to say it. We're going to screw up this movie for you, okay? I can't. The whole point of this podcast is for me to talk about these movies, so I'm going to talk about it, okay?
The movie spoiler podcast.
Yes, maybe that's another one.
At least in parentheses.
All right, we can add a little line in there just to make it fun. But so continue. I just want to know for you why you like. I know we were just picking movies, but so.
Well, mostly I guess I initially was interested in this film because I'm not surprised that often. I'm not like totally surprised that often.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, I really didn't see that coming. And what I didn't see coming, spoil, is
yeah, go
that
for it.
Tully is the name of the night nanny. And it turns out that she is Charlize Theron, that she is her young self,
right,
helping her to get through almost a psychotic break of exhaustion as a new mother.
And that's the part that, and I will, like I said, I think I was a little angry at the end, and I have a thing, and this is just my little, sorry for everyone, I have my things, because I went to film school, and when I was in film school, there was this very cliche film school thing, which was like young film students love to write stories because I don't know if they don't know how to write a story yet, but I can't tell you how many shorts I saw where the ending was like, it's all a dream.
Like
and guess
Dallas.
What? It's all a dream. Like yeah, everybody yeah. wants to be so artistic and like different. Everyone's trying to identify out of the main, you know, the main themes and like, let's do something really crazy. And to me, it would annoy me because I'd be like, just come on, just commit, you know,
yeah.
commit to something, have something to say when it's over, make a point. That's more brave to me than just saying like, whoa, guess what? It's not real. You know, like, whoa, trickaroo, you know, like, and I get that. So I have a little pet peeve with it. So when I saw the ending and it was this kind of twist ending where suddenly this person wasn't there the whole time. You know, that's the perception I got is she wasn't literally physically there.
Right.
This is like, and they like don't.
No one else ever saw her or spoke to her and we didn't really notice.
No. And I think. I was at this and, you know, me being a film person, the second it happened where I'm like, OK, wait a second, let me go rewind my brain back through this whole movie and decide, is there a moment that they messed that up? Because I thought for sure that the guy had seen her, the husband, but I guess they explained that away because she was also with them in the bed.
Yeah.
Dude, what about that scene? I thought that movie went, and this is the funny part. They're like, the twist is coming. Be prepared. And I'm like, is this thing going to go gay? Like, why is that the twist? And then I remember Nicole's upstairs, and I'm like, come on. Is this going to be about gay? I'm like, that's stupid. I'm like, that's not a good twist. I'm like, is it about people that have threesomes? Like, is this going to be a
that
swinger
was weird,
movie?
Uncomfortable.
I really thought that's where it was going. And I'm like, this is not, this is,
why did Donna suggest this?
I need a tissue. I'm crying, you guys. I'm so upset. It's really making me upset. I was looking for it, so I kept. And I don't know why I'm upset by movies about. I don't see many movies about people that swing, but it really bothered me because I was like, "Is this a thing now? Are people doing this?" Because I am not okay with it. Like, I'm really judgmental.
There's a very popular book right now called Three Women. Have you heard about it?
No.
I have a copy from a friend of mine. I'll ask her if I can lend it to you. It's nonfiction, which I don't read a lot of, about three women, separate stories, trauma, and one of them is a swinging story.
Okay.
And it's really disturbing and weird, and I just brought that up.
Yeah.
So there. But it can, I think I felt the same way you did about that bedroom scene, because I was like, that's not what this movie's about.
No.
I didn't think. You know what else? I don't even remember who played the husband. That's how much he didn't matter. And I'm.
It was really her movie. Yeah. I mean, it was her story.
Pullman?
It's not. I know that guy's face. He was in like a bunch of other movies. I'm trying to remember what movie specifically.
And he was very good, but I'm thinking
they
did that on purpose.
Yeah,
he is
good.
They made him unimportant on purpose.
Yeah. No, they did.
Because it wasn't his story. It was really her internal story.
Yeah. There's a lot. Actually, it's funny because my first take on it was, that's stupid. Oh, come on. You know, give us a real ending. And then, you know, but I'm always open to, like, discuss a movie. And I think that, you know, the problem I have with it is because even though the twist is there, it's a sad ending. It's not like this means her life is better. This creation of herself, or whatever you want to call it, multiple personality, dissociation, whatever, she is there to kind of help her, but I don't know if she actually helped her. Do you think she helped her?
I felt like she was suicidal.
Okay.
And that Tully got her through that night that maybe she wouldn't have gotten through, that the manifestation of Tully the nanny got
okay.
her through. That's
but
that's
she also created her drama, like, which was like, I'm gonna make bad choices and do crazy things.
Wasn't that mourning her youth?
Maybe. Wow, look at you.
Well,
yeah.
No, I
deep
after today, read that interview that I emailed to you.
Uh huh. Oh, okay. I tried to start reading it. I didn't. I sound like the worst follow-through person that's ever existed.
No, it was late. We talked about this like last night for today.
I'm like, let me print the wrong script. Let's just, and maybe I should do this on purpose. I'm going to give you the wrong things to read. I have no idea, but I will take a second look at that for sure.
It was, that was mentioned in that. That wasn't my deep insight. That was mentioned in the interview. And, when she had these, it's not when you're a mother, or even like when you're married.
Right.
It's not like you regret your choices, but you can still be sad about what will no longer be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that resonates in that film.
Yeah. I loved how the one thing I did like is how they opened it with the boy and the brushing his arms,
mm-hmm.
a very beautiful visual scene of the way she just slowly does this with him. And then it kind of ends there too. So they do bring it full circle. And in that moment, the difference is that she trusts him to tell her instead of her like making the choices, like, I need to do this. This is what it's just happening all the time. This is what we've decided. He kind of says, I like it, but you know, this is how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they let it go. It's like suddenly we're letting go of all these rules that we've created or ideas that we've created about how I need to fix you or help you. Or, I mean, and I might be reading too much into moments like that, but
I don't think so. I think
really,
I think that movie meant for us to read everything into it that we could possibly find.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, but I don't know why I felt like it was a cop out. But I mean, because she's, to me, in a sense, if we're going to compare a movie comparison of these two movies, which probably shouldn't be in the same basket, but there is a similar theme of like mothers who go a little crazy, but in very different ways. And I don't know, like, are they better in the end? None of them. I don't know if she's, I felt like she wasn't better in the end. And I was doing that thing where I was like, wait a second. She just, basically we're supposed to understand that she imagined this person and now everyone knows that person didn't really exist and they just send her back home to be a parent again. I'm like, does that happen? The people, are they allowed to do,
is that a good idea?
Are we allowed to do that? Like, just be like, sure, go raise a couple kids and be alone with them. Like, and her, and there was a lot of commentary on how the husband's role wasn't really visible and like he doesn't play a part in helping with these kids much.
Yeah. It was Ron Livingston was the actor. I looked it up and he has, he has done a lot of work. Anyone listening would recognize him, but he has the ability to just sort of be a likable, befuddled, I'm not sure what to do kind of guy.
Yeah, which I think is typical for a lot of men, probably, are people's like stereotypes of like how men handle babies and like what we, which, sorry guys, I don't mean to say that about you. It's probably not true. You're probably, you know, that's a stereotype too. It's not fair almost, right? There's probably so many guys that aren't like that. But that's like the cliche, is that the guy is just, you know, playing a video game and like going to work every day and blah, blah, blah. But there
trying
was
to stay out of her way.
Yeah, his, like
his,
he's
what he thinks she needs is for him to stay out of her way. And I'll tell you that
that's very true.
The Scott was a wonderful dad to babies, which is unusual. Not a lot of men are comfortable with babies, but he was actually more comfortable than I was.
I'm not even comfortable with babies.
But our one,
they
our
scare
one
me. They're
argument
hard.
Was. And I think this is common between men and women, he would do anything I asked him to do, but I didn't want to have to ask.
Oh, man, there's that thing.
Yes. Like, yeah. Like, you know Montana needs snacks for school. You know the dishwasher needs to be emptied. You know all of the same things I know. Why don't you just do them? I don't ask you. What I can do. So it was funny, and I think he was that guy that really thought he was serving her best by just staying out
of the
way.
Well, he was scared.
And she was a little scary.
She was scary. I mean, I think women with babies are scary. I think that's like, you know.
They can be, yeah.
It's very intimidating. You know, you're not physically, you don't go through the physical process. You watch them go through this experience, which is like their bodies change and their upset and they cry, like there's all of those things. I think I'd be scared too, like I don't want to upset her, this is hard enough.
Yeah, it totally makes
sense. My god, like she's exhausted and like I don't know what I'm supposed to do. This is not my bag, like this is something I don't understand. And so, and they don't understand, you know, if you don't, I think there's something about physically going through that and having a child come through you is very different. It just feels, it's just a crazy experience. And it does take a toll on you emotionally, mentally, physically. And maybe men are, maybe sometimes the husband or the spouse is like once, they don't know what to do. I just feel like they're like scared puppies, you know? They're like, I don't understand.
Yeah,
just
I don't
tell
think
me
it's,
what to do.
I don't think
tell
it's
me.
Out of not wanting to help or being able to help. They just, it's fear. It probably
it's fear.
Is fear. I'll tell you what movies really annoy me most about mothering.
Tell me.
Is that film that represents the like hippie mom who walks around with the baby nursing under a pretty blanket in the grocery store and everything is chill and she goes home and makes organic things and blenders and you know, like plays soft music and the baby sleeps all the time. I hate those films because I suppose those women exist. But I don't know any of them. And I think it makes you feel bad for not mothering so easily.
Why do we compare? You know, I've gotten older and I don't do it as much. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm growing, but it's tough because we're doing that. You know, there are books on being a mom, but your experience is your experience. So I totally get that. And I know whenever I see that, there's the part of me that goes, it's not real. Like, there's that woman has a freak out. She might look like that. There's no way that any of us don't have those moments. And maybe that's why this movie resonates, is because it's all of those moments, right?
Yeah, it's hard to watch. I would never tell a new mother to watch that movie.
Really?
No, because I think it would just...
like freak them out?
Yeah, I think it would be too scary. Watch it later, and then you can feel really good about yourself not having been that crazy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the movie's commentary. Actually, the scene I loved was when she goes ballistic on the administrative woman at the school, because they keep calling her kid quirky. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling that, too. I was like, is someone going to fucking tell this person to stop with that baloney? Because that's not the right way to approach the problem with her son. And no one's helping her. And they're labeling him as quirky. But the way that scene, if I was like picking a scene, I was like, that's the scene for me. Mm-hmm. Like, where she just loses her mind in such a real way. And she's like, you know what? He's not quirky, okay? Is he fucking retarded? Just tell me he's retarded. Like, she's just like, give me the truth. Give me the truth. I'm sick of it. Like, I can handle it. And I think as parents, we feel like that sometimes. You know, it's like, you feel like people are sugarcoating for you, or you might go this way or that way, and you just want the truth. It's like,
yeah, help me.
I can handle it, actually. I birthed this child. I think, like, after watching a birth, guess what? Women can take it. Mm-hmm. We can take the truth, you know, especially if it's to help us. And I felt like that was a really real moment for me, and how we, like, try so hard to advocate for our kids, matter what it is with them, whether they're, you know, having trouble like the kid in this movie, in a much more serious way, or just the subtle things that we deal with as parents, and you feel like, I don't know how I'm supposed to handle that. What am I supposed to do?
Going back to Mommy Dearest, one of the craziest things is that, you know, as parents, our hearts break every day over tiny little things that our children experience.
Yeah.
But hers didn't.
Right.
She had no empathy whatsoever for anything her daughter went through. I mean, of course, it was written by her daughter. So
it was all about her.
Mm-hmm.
It was like insulting to her if things didn't look the way that, if they didn't go down in a way that she wanted them to. It was almost like she was being attacked. She was the victim of her children.
Yes.
And everyone else, you know. That was really...
Well, film schools are probably not having Tully, Mommy Dearest classes. But I think it's interesting that we did this.
Oh my God, totally.
Because you know what? Isn't there always a way to find common ground between films? Any films, I think.
No, and I really, I mean, for me, movies are, I have a big love for these movies. And I mentioned in the other podcast just that when I was growing up, it wasn't just like a place that I liked to go and just, it felt like my safe place. But we didn't grow up with the internet, you know. Mm-hmm. We didn't grow up with like, oh, I can Google anything. I can like, you know, look up what it's like to live in Europe or live in New York City. I said this on the previous podcast, sorry for repeating, but I loved Woody Allen movies because I was like, that's New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm.
That was my perception because of movies. They gave me an inside look into things and places and experiences that I wasn't able to have because I was just living in suburbia and that was my experience. But I think movies do that to us. And this is a movie that I think is for moms. I don't know if you're a mother and you watch that movie, if it has an effect on you at all. I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know.
So your life experience has a lot to do with how you take in a story. And not just movies, like you're in the play world, right? I mean, I love plays. Like I think that at the end of it, it's all really just about stories and people telling stories because they want to share their own life experience and their own take on the world and being human. And then we get to receive them,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome. I mean, it's like, it's my favorite thing. So I don't know. How are we? How much time do we spend? Quite a while. We should probably put an end to it.
Okay.
Do you have anything else you want to share, Donna?
No, just thank you for inviting me on. This was a fun last minute.
Did you have fun?
Gig. Absolutely, I loved it. I want you to. I'm going to give you a list of Natalie Wood movies to watch if you haven't seen them. And
what's your favorite Natalie Wood movie, real quick?
Inside Daisy Clover. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Oh my God, you absolutely. There's This Property Is Condemned, which is a weird, dark movie that she did with Robert Redford. And Inside Daisy Clover was Robert Redford's very first film role.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he plays a closeted movie star, which back then was probably a huge risk for him.
That's huge.
Christopher Plummer, you know, who was Captain Von Trapp in Sound of Music, is an evil movie producer. It's so great.
Great. We'll definitely have to, maybe we'll revisit, we'll have to back on, and then you can talk about that. All right, so I'm just going to end with one fun
audio.
One fun audio, and we really, sorry, Tully, we kind of really gave it a little more attention to Mommy Dearest, but how can you not? Because, of course.
But hopefully people will be interested enough by our conversation to watch Tully, because it's a curious film.
I think it's worth a watch. I'm glad I saw it, because I heard about it and I wanted to see it. So I don't run from movies that don't make me feel good. You know, I like that. I'll take it. I don't have to like the movie to watch it, you know. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just see. Let's just see if I play this. Guys, I want to thank everybody for listening. If you like this show, if you're into what we're talking about, please like and subscribe and download these episodes. Follow Rehoboth Social, and we'll have another episode for you next week. So thanks, everybody. And I'm going to leave you with a little Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford.
No more hangers! No more.
One more time.
Hangers!
Thanks, everyone. See ya.